you, Jeff. We're going to start off the question and answer session with the questions posted online. And then once we get through those, if we still have time, I'll open up the phone lines. But definitely continue to type in your questions now, and we'll just move through them until we're out of time. And I'm going to bring back up the introduction slide that had all information about the had the presenters' email addresses as well as the freight listserv information. So I'm just going to start at the top of the list with the questions, and we'll work our way down. So I think these first questions were primarily for Bill, but I invite any of the presenters to jump in. Bill, this question was directed towards your presentation. Since most states do not have international borders, it appears that their importance may be understated. Do you want to comment on that?
Well, that could be. You know, I think this is sort of like peeling the layers of an onion, that some things are going to be more applicable to some states than others. And certainly border crossings are not only important for the states that are on the borders, but for NAFTA trade overall, for example, and national trade. So I don't think there's any intent to, at this point, exclude or specifically include border crossing activity, but it's obviously critical for the nation as a whole.
Okay. And the next question for you is, what is the list of states included in the task force questions?
I see there's a follow-up question about whether or not this the survey results are posted online, and I don't recall whether the list of states responding is specifically in that report. If it's not, we will confirm or provide that listing summary, and also confirm that that summary is still online, which I believe is under material of the ASHTO Standing Committee on Performance Measurement.
Okay, thank you. For freight corridors, is there a need to consider more than just the interstate highway system?
Certainly. In my mind, that's a key discussion topic. How do we define significant freight corridors? And obviously, it's not just the interstate system. Certainly, a lot of our truck volumes are, heavy truck volumes are on the interstate system, but there are both large regional corridors that may have portions off the interstate system. And some of the work that Jeff was talking about, as well as freight analysis framework, freight flow information, will probably be needed to really define where those significant moves are and make sure they're incorporated. But yes, certainly more than the interstate system, although that may be a good place to start. The first, we have good data there, so that may be the appropriate starting point, at least.
Okay. And you just answered this question, but if you could just mention again, is the ASHTO report and survey results available online?
I'm fairly certain it is. If you look under the committee, the Standing Committee on Performance Measurement, under ASHTO, I believe it's in the list of materials there. We'll verify that and make sure it's posted up there if it's not.
Okay. And I'm just going to type in the ASHTO website into the box here, and people should be able to find it from there. Okay. Let's see here. I believe the next question was directed towards Gordon. What about including measures related to energy use and source?
What measures are included in terms of energy use? Was that the question?
Yes. And source.
Okay. I don't think we had energy use other than total petroleum use, and we were suggesting all the air quality measures that are commonly produced through a conformity analysis, such as VOCs, NOx, and particulates, and then we were suggesting greenhouse emissions. So we didn't have an extensive series of energy measures, just the one measure, but then related to them, directly correlating to them, would have been the greenhouse emissions as a recommended measure.
Okay. And if the last 2 years decline of GDPFL indicate the decline in manufacturing? How does the previous decades reflect the movement of manufacturing overseas?
That I'm not sure. If you were to read the several years of the Council of Supply Chain Management Professionals report, the general trend line has been just because of efficiencies in the overall transportation system and the logistics industry and the cost of inventory and goods in particular. What the major factor last year was that manufacturing appeared to be such a smaller percent of the overall economy because of its decline that there was less goods produced. Therefore, the amount of freight as a percent of GDP fell. For instance, the financial sector or the telecommunications sector didn't fall as much. And the point of using that example was to show that us just saying that decline in logistics as a percent of GDP, if you look at that and say it's good, you may want to understand what the other unintended consequences are of that trend. Therefore, if we're going to measure freight performance, we ought to also provide clarifying background explanation as to why the trends occurred. So as I recall from the Council of Supply Chain Management Professionals report from last year, the overall decline in economic output, particularly the decline in manufacturing, just led to steep drop-off in overall logistics, and that led to the decline in logistics cost as a percent of GDP.
Okay. Do we need to develop metrics that can compare USA against Europe and Asia, for example?
Well, I suppose it would be nice, but the level of detail the level of complexity to compare exactly what they mean by what we mean by a particular measurement would just be orders of magnitude more complex than what we're already looking at here. What we came up against, over and over again in the research was that if you want to compare two different bodies, you have to have a common architecture and data system for both. They have to define everything exactly the same way. They have to report it on the exact same time frame using the exact kind of geographic referencing systems and others. Otherwise, you can't compare them. So while it would be nice to compare Europe and the United States, and you might be able to do so at a very, very gross level, to boil it down to a literal performance metric that was credible would be extremely complicated on an ongoing basis to compare the U.S. and Europe. And we spent quite a bit of time talking about in the report what is a performance measure. If you're talking about just gross indicators, then perhaps you could make some comparative analysis between Europe and the United States. If you're trying to get it down to a precise metric to measure the success of an investment or performance of a particular facility, you're talking about a great deal of granularity that becomes quite expensive to maintain and to sustain. So while it might be nice to compare the U.S. and Europe to do so on an ongoing basis to the degree of complexity that we, for instance, measure air quality emissions would become quite expensive and perhaps intrusive as well.
Okay, thank you. We now have some questions for Jeff. Let's see here. Let me scroll up. We've had a bunch of questions come in. Okay. The Rio Grande Valley is surprisingly omitted from the speed study, considering we have four international bridge crossings and we have one of the fastest growing metropolitan areas. Jeff, do you want to comment on that?
Well, as far as interstates, we had a list of top 25 interstate locations that were deemed the most freight significant corridors in the U.S. Based on FAF data, and those are the 25 that we went with on those corridors. As far as crossing times into Mexico, those tend to be very very difficult to calculate because the amount of data is rather small. Not many U.S. carriers send their drivers into Mexico and many of the vehicles coming in from Mexico aren't equipped with this type of technology. Hopefully that answers the question.
Okay, thank you. And is there a reason that IH-30 in Texas and Arkansas was not included on the freight travel speed map in your presentation?
Again, this is the same reason that I just mentioned. We went with 25 corridors. You can certainly send me and Crystal Jones at Federal Highway a request to have that location monitored in the future. We are going to be, as I said, monitoring additional bottlenecks, but we hope to increase the number of interstate corridors that we conduct space mean speed analysis on.
Okay. The $5.7 million that you mentioned for the Atlanta Spaghetti Junction suggests perhaps that if there was a project cost amortized at, say, $3 million per year, that the freight industry would consider a freight user charge to pay for it?
I'm not sure if in that particular location a user charge for the freight industry would be advisable, or if the freight community would embrace that. I would suggest that the current amount of money that's put into, say, the Highway Trust Fund could be allocated towards that particular location. I don't want to go into a whole spiel about how much money is raised through the diesel tax annually, and that diesel tax is mostly paid through paid for by the trucking industry. That money, for instance, could go towards that particular project and would help freight movement in that way.
This is Bill Gardner. I just wanted to add a comment to that if I could. Our department's currently conducting a research project in association with the University of Minnesota to look at various scenarios of congestion pricing, value pricing, specific to trucks, and whether or not there would be sufficient benefits that would accrue to those users that they would, in fact, support that kind of a scheme. And trying to draw on some of the things that have been done internationally as well as in this country, and better define what those benefits might be, because I think it is very important that any type of a scheme like that produces an equitable distribution of both benefits and costs, of course.
Okay, thank you. And I think Dan Murray typed a comment in there that I think was in response to that question. I definitely encourage the dialogue to continue in the chat area. We encourage that. Anybody's thoughts, and if there's further questions on that topic, put them in as well. Jeff, again for you, is speed data available on non-interstate roads, especially near MPO areas or on interstate business loops?
Absolutely. It's available anywhere where our truck population of several hundred thousand trucks travel. So we're involved with several MPO studies, such as the Houston MPO study, and we just finished up a study with the Atlanta Regional Commission. So basically all of North America, if the trucks in our database are there, we will have speed data. Just think back to that slide I showed for Houston. That's just a small time period of data in that particular location, and there is a lot of data in that map that I showed piled on top of itself, basically.
And I just want to mention, Dan Murray is also with Atrian. He has been responding to some of the questions in there as well, so thank you, Dan, for providing some supporting information also. Next question for Jeff. Could the FPM data be used to distinguish between the volume of interregional or MPO region and through trips?
Yes. We've worked with MPOs on this and can isolate specific trips that either do or don't have stops within a particular polygon, within a particular region.
Okay. The next question is for all of the presenters. What are key measures you have come across in measuring the flexibility, especially pinpointing bottlenecks of intermodal systems? We'll just start with Bill and work down from there.
Well, we've been involved in, by flexibility, I'm not quite sure what the intent was there. We are part of a research project with the Mississippi Valley Freight Coalition looking at the resiliency of the freight network when there are disruptions in the freight system or significant bottlenecks. And again, I think it, primary measure is the cost of delay, as has been talked about a little bit. And so that's one that's being explored currently.
Okay, Gordon, any thoughts on that?
Well, again, I think our project was intended to sort of support the assumption of like congressional decision making. And so when we looked at intermodal bottlenecks, we were stuck with the dilemma of, A, how would you define what an intermodal, you know, bottleneck is, and then how do you put in place and impose a measurement system that would be in place for years at a time? And so we did not come up with a set of intermodal bottleneck measures. I mean, we recognize that the national highway system and that its intermodal connectors are very important, and we say that. But for instance, the ports were an example of intermodal connections, and the ports, who are obviously very knowledgeable about your own operations, were among the groups who were most skeptical about the ability to develop an ongoing, very accurate reporting performance measurement process. And they said just because of the extreme variability between their ports and what would cause delay on any given day. And so when you try to then develop a way to measure all sort of intermodal exchanges on a consistent ongoing basis, we decided that at this preliminary stage of national freight performance measurement, that just has to be left for a later time when the measurement process is even more mature. In these initial stages, we just couldn't envision at this point with the available tools how you would measure it and staff it and support it on an ongoing basis.
Okay, and Jeff?
Yes, we haven't done a large amount of analysis with intermodal information. Of course, we focused on trucking-specific operations, but we can see trucks entering, leaving intermodal facilities. We can see delays at those intermodal facilities. We do work with trailer tracking data, and we do focus on you know, national truck trips and whatnot, primarily because truck rail intermodal is less than 4% of all tonnage. So it's not necessarily a large segment of what's out there to be measured.
Okay. The next question also is for all presenters. It was mentioned that ports are skeptical of measurement since each port is different. What measurements would any of you suggest or recommend for ports? And I'll just open up to any one of you who want to jump in.
Okay, well, this is Gordon, and we asked that question repeatedly, and we got many, many different answers from many different people. So I can't say we would recommend any set of them as being representative of a consensus that they were good measures. But obviously the turnaround time of the ship in port, the efficiency of roadway connections into the port, the storage area, the lift efficiency. But the ports, when we, really tried to interview them on such things, they would come back and say, well, yeah, we, based on the configuration of our port, we may be inefficient in that sector, but we make up for it in some of, by compensating for that in another way. And so the overall things such as, what's the cost per lift and the amount of time per lift and physical facilities into the port to connect into it, such as do you have rail and do you have good highway access into the port, those sort of configuration measures one could envision. When we got into operational,
where we really reached a lot of skepticism. And it was interesting. We spent quite a bit of time on a Marriott report to Congress that Marriott did. And Marriott came back and told Congress not only could they not measure the port, but they couldn't even think of a set of metrics that would be agreed upon by the port industry. And so that seems to be an area that's going to need a lot of additional work if we're going to really measure and understand how efficiently they're working.
I think that our primary focus so far in Minnesota has been more of an indicator of the amount of freight, say by commodity type, that's moving through various ports, not so much to compare them against each other within the state, but as a sort of comparison with other states and the industry analysis of what's going on, for example, in our taconite mining industry, which is pretty volatile. On a programmatic level, because we have investment programs, for example, available loans and grants to improve rail lines, roadway connectors, facilities actually at ports. And, we focus on those things as well and kind of moving towards an asset management approach to sort of grade the condition and capacity of all those facilities and try to suggest some strategies for improving that. So it's not so much, again, at the report card level, it's more programmatically developed to identify projects and to request early funding at the state level to address
Okay, and Jeff, did you have anything to add to that? Not sure, is Jeff still on the line?
Sorry, I was on mute. No, I didn't.
Okay. Well, Jeff, I think this next question was for you. Can we identify if trucks are running full or empty or carrying imports versus exports?
We do not have commodity information that we use for these particular performance measures. Is it possible in the future? I believe so.
Okay. The next question is posed to all presenters. I'm not sure I quite understand the question, but maybe you do. Will there be a matrix related to gross weights? Which states still employ the primary and secondary roadway system network in some aspect? For example, the gross weight table listed in state statute is linked to primary and secondary roadway designations and do not refer to functional classification system. Is this how other states operate as well?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I certainly can't answer that one, I'm afraid.
The only thing I'm thinking of is certainly state statutes versus federal requirements are defining certain systems in terms of allowable truck weights and size. And so that's a very, very defined system. I guess I haven't really thought about it in terms of performance per se in the relationship to weight. So it's not quite sure what the line of inquiry was there, but it's kind of raised my interest.
Okay. Well, Marilee, if you want to either clarify by typing in or in a few minutes we'll open the phone lines if you want to ask over the phone, maybe we can get some more clarification there. Next question is for Jeff. Regarding border crossings, do you include Mexico as well as Canada and in both directions? Do you look only at roadway congestion or also at congestion related to security measures?
We look at both congestion related to roadway conditions and security measures. Basically, it's the time it takes to get from one location on one side of the border to one location on the other side of the border. What we are currently looking at is 5 U.S.-Canada crossings multidirectionally. The tool that we're building will include 15 locations between the U.S. and Canada, and we are not currently looking at U.S.-Mexico crossings for reasons that I mentioned earlier, but I believe there are others who are looking at this.
Okay, and the next question, I think you actually answered already, but for truck movements in general, do you have data on the vehicle types and cargoes, such as container versus flatbed?
No, we don't. Again, I think Dan has mentioned this in the chat. We have met with Oak Ridge National Laboratory, and as mentioned,
many of you know, they're working on the FAF, and we've discussed linking FHWA's FAF with this FPM information. And actually, here in ATSI's Atlanta office, a couple of us combined the two data sets regarding average annual daily truck traffic and that sort of information. So the two data sets, the FPM data set and that data set, we have been able through our research to connect. It's just a, you know, a matter of looking at commodities from this point. But as far as the data we receive is concerned, we don't directly directly receive that at the moment from the sources of data that we have.
Okay. The next question, I'm not sure if it's really meant for you, Jeff, or is more meant to the audience in general, but the question is, has anyone linked the value of commodity-specific OD flows, such as from FAF flows, to the truck OD data produced by ATRI? Can we do it, and can we then put an economic value on these flows? And Jeff, I don't know if you have any thoughts on that.
I think we absolutely can. When you look at the maps that I showed at the end of my presentation, that is just, let's say, 1,000 trucks moving over 7 days. Well, that information can be compiled and analyzed in the GIS environment for years and years, looking at hundreds of thousands of trucks. Can we put an economic value on these flows? Absolutely. Absolutely. It can show how critical the roadways and these truck movements are to the nation's economy. It's a lot of number crunching, a lot of computing, but it's certainly possible, and we're definitely looking at how this is best done. We're looking at various methodologies, investigating those sort of things.
I think it would be great if we could link it with the commodity-specific data. That seems to be the real challenge. And I know that when we have used freight analysis framework data and tried to cross-reference it with some of our own truck counts, it's been somewhat problematic and works better in some places, some types of corridors than others. So I think it's absolutely a ripe area to try to pursue.
Mm-hmm. And the wonderful thing with this information is it's actual movements of actual trucks. It's not modeled. This is exactly what they are doing.
Okay. I don't see any other questions typed in at this point, so we'll go ahead and the operator will give instructions on how to ask questions over the phone in case anybody wants to talk with any questions.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your touch-tone phone. Please unmute your phone and record your first and last name clearly when prompted. To withdraw your question, please press star 2. One moment for our first question.
And I should mention, this actually is only for the people who have called in for the audio. If you're listening to it over the computer, you won't be able to do this. Okay, well, if there are no further questions, we'll go ahead and end a little bit early today. I want to thank all three presenters. I think we had three really interesting presentations, and thank you for everybody in attendance. We had a good amount of questions and some good discussion going. The recording from today, the presentations, and the transcript, and actually, if you give me 1 second, I believe another question did just come in, and since we still have time, we definitely want to address that. Okay, so this might be a clarification on the previous question. Will there be a performance measure for gross weight as compared to speed and reliability, such as is a truck more efficient at a given gross weight? So that's the first part of the question. And I'm not sure if who that's actually directed to, but if any of the presenters have any thoughts on that.
This is Gordon. In our research project, we certainly didn't get into that degree of granularity on a national set of metrics.
This is Bill Gardner. We've certainly pursued questions like that.
And Jeff, any comments?
Well, Dan actually commented, but I'll read what his comment is. Attree developed a fuel efficiency model with Cummins, an engine manufacturer, that cross factors weight, speed, and fuel efficiency. We did that for the main DOT, and I believe there's a report related to that on our website, attreeonline.org.
Okay. And then the second part of the question is, do other states maintain a gross weight table related to primary and secondary route designations? For any of you, the presenters, I don't know if you're aware of that, but I also invite people who are still online to, you know, if your state's done that, to go ahead and type in, and, you know, you're welcome to exchange information with Marilee if you'd like. But Bill, Gordon, or Jeff, are you aware of any states doing that?
We don't define our roads with those particular labels. They're defined in other ways, but certainly weight limits are applicable to certain types of roads, whether those are local roads or state roads or the interstate, each with its own limits and peculiar allowances. So in general, we do that. We don't happen to use those particular labels of primary and secondary, though.
Yeah, for instance, in Ohio, there would be some weight variation by some functional classes, primarily all the very heavy loads are permitted, and that analysis is based upon the individual bridges that they might be having to pass over, not necessarily functional class. So there is some variation by functional class, but when you get into the over 80,000 pounds, pretty much on a route-by-route basis, depending upon the structures that have to be crossed.
Okay. And yeah, again, if anybody in attendance wants to, you know, has any thoughts on that, feel free to type that in as well. Well, I don't see any other questions now. So I guess we'll go ahead and close out. But if you think of anything while I'm reading these last few pieces, please feel free to type it in. As I was mentioning, the recording and the presentations and a transcript will be available online within a few weeks, and I'll send an email out to everybody who registered to let you know when it's available. If you didn't register in advance and attended today and want to receive the follow-up information, you can either just send me a private note in there with your email address, or you can email it to me and I'll type in my email address in a minute. As a reminder, if you're an AICP member and would like to receive 1.5 certification maintenance credits for today, please make sure you were either signed in with your first and last name, or if you were in a group, type your name into the chat box. Please also download the evaluation form and email it to me after you've completed it. The next seminar will be held on September 15th and will be about freight and the carbon footprint efforts to enhance supply chain sustainability. The seminar is not yet open for registration. It should be either later today or tomorrow, and I'll send a note through the freight planning listserv once registration is available. If you haven't done so already, I encourage you, well, as I said, it's not available for registration, but I definitely encourage you to visit the Talking Freight website, sign up for the seminar once it is available, as well as future seminars once we get those posted. And I also encourage you to join the Freight Planning Listserv if you haven't already done so. The listserv is the primary method of distributing information about Talking Freight. So with that, thank you to all three presenters, and thank you to everybody in attendance, and enjoy the rest of your day.